I'd like to welcome everyone to the August Ordinary Council meeting for Brighton Council. Welcome to councillors, senior staff and members of the public gallery. Thank you very much for your attendance. I'd like to begin by, in accordance with Regulation 8 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures 2025, the chairperson is to make a verbal statement at the beginning of the meeting to the effect that an audio recording is being made of this meeting. All persons attending this meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting. And finally, language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. I would like to begin by acknowledging the Palawapakana, Tasmanian Aboriginal community, as the traditional and original owners of the skies, land and water of Lutruwita, and forward our respects to their elders both past and present. Brighton Council acknowledges the continued connection the Tasmanian Aboriginal people still have to the skies, land and water of Lutruwita that provides them with the food, medicine and craft celebrated through ceremony today. Item 3 on our agenda is apologies and requests for leave of absence. Councillor De La Torre has requested leave of absence for this evening's meeting. Moved by Councillor Murtagh, seconded by Councillor McMaster. Any debate? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 4 is nil. Item 5 is confirmation of minutes, and item 5.1 is confirmation of minutes of the Ordinary Council meeting held on the 15th of July. They're included in our agenda and are submitted for confirmation. Is there any questions, amendments? If not, is someone prepared that those minutes be
moved?
Thank you. Councillor Geard and seconded by Councillor Curran. If there's no discussion and debate, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 6 is declaration of interest. Would anyone like to declare an interest in on anything on the agenda this evening?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I've got 14.1, the tea tree subdivision.
Thank you.
Same for me, 14.1.
Thank you. Councillor Geard and Councillor Irons have 14.1.
I'm not sure about 16.6, but I think I'll step out anyway.
Understand? Yep. And Councillor Curran, 16.6. We'll just have those noted on our agenda. Item 7 is public question time and deputations. And we have one person to speak to us this evening, Nikki Kastner, Family Services Tasmania, and organiser of the Butterflies and Boots Ball. Nikki, would you like to come up?
To do a gala ball, and they called it Butterflies and Boots, and a nurturing afternoon for women that have experienced domestic violence. So we thought the purpose of this is an event centre, and we approached you guys to use it, which, we said thank you, so that was great. So that was really exciting. So we held the event on the 31st of May, which was during the month for convention. On the Saturday. The nurturing afternoon involved 20 women being nominated, where we provided hair, makeup, a gown for the ball, and some other things, as well as professional photography done for them. So that was really beautiful. And then we had the ball in the evening. So that was great. This presentation we actually did for Sandy Bay Rotary, and it went for half an hour, so I won't do it all, but what I'll do is just go through to the meaning of butterflies and boots. So butterflies symbolise transformation, rebirth, personal growth, cloak, freedom, change and joy. The boots we saw as protective and they support us as we walk along different paths, a bit like how we try to armour ourselves with strength and courage to travel the journey of life. So paired together, they both represent the hope, strength, resilience, courage and rebirth of women and children affected by domestic and family abuse and violence. So that's where the name came from. We've registered it as a business name, so we did that before the event. Why we wanted to do this? Working in this space, I've nearly worked in this space for nearly 3 years, and it's intense. It's really full on. Unless you've been affected by it or worked in this sector, it's very hard to know how pervasive it is, how it affects our communities, especially out here. And I see it every day, and it's full on. And so Kira and I wanted to do something joyous. Something joyous for women, something that celebrated them and just gave them a moment of happiness and joy in their life. So that was the reason behind all of this. And Brighton Council helped to make that happen, so thank you very much. We didn't have any grant funding, no sponsorship. We just sort of almost woke up one day and just said, we've got to do this. We're not going to spend a year trying to chase money for it. We're just going to do it. So the provision of the Civic Centre was an amazing support, and the surprise of her $500 towards catering was beautiful. So thank you very much for that. We used Bean to Brew as our caterer, and that provided some wonderful food for it as well. So thank you. Spoke a bit about that. These are hard to see. So on the night, we actually got some written feedback from people, which was amazing, such as, this is one of the most important events for women of domestic violence to go to. Women, no matter class or demographic, we can come together as women under one cause. Please keep it going. Very empowering event, well organised and enjoyable. Thank you so much. As a victim survivor, it was an awesome day. Looking forward to the next one. Brilliant event, such a platform to bring together victim survivors and advocates to discuss the issues and share stories. There were some key themes that came through the feedback, and one was that it was a safe space. People felt really safe there. The Civic Centre actually worked perfectly. It was brilliant. We had the theatre divided off for the nurturing afternoon, and then we had the whole of the big Civic Centre opened up for the ball. It was absolutely perfect. Women felt safe. They felt heard and they felt connected. And those were three key themes that came from the feedback from what we did. And that's critical for women that have experienced domestic violence, because they don't feel heard, they feel isolated, and they feel judged. So we provided a moment in their lives where that wasn't the case for them. So that was really important for them. A couple of really cool stories that came out of it that we weren't expecting. Two women and their children flew from South Australia for it, which was amazing. They saw it on Facebook and they decided they were coming down for it. They want to start doing some of them themselves in South Australia under our banner. Another thing that happened after the event was a young lady, Ella, in New Caledonia, got in contact with us. She had seen the ABC story that was floating around the internet that they did for us. And she's doing a project where she's gathering 5 stories of victims from New Caledonia, and she wants 5 stories from Australia. So we're helping her gather those 5 stories. So they're two really, I think, really cool moments that have come from this that were completely unexpected. So that's very exciting. That was the picture my daughter did. These are some photos. So we had 2 professional photographers volunteer their time. Everyone that supported us volunteered their time. So we had professional photographers, we had professional hairdressers, professional makeup artists, 2 professional DJs, a professional Zumba lady who just stole the show. She was amazing on the night. She got everybody up and dancing. It was so much fun. But the photos that came out of it were just absolutely beautiful. Lady with her hand on her hip. She was one of the key hairdressers and makeup artists. And this colour photo, so that's Selena Thomas. She is the CEO of Engender Equality, the lady with the blonde hair down in the corner. So she emceed for us on the night. So Engender Equality is one of the key organisations in this space. This lady in the wedding gown. This was another beautiful story. She decided she was going to wear her wedding gown on the night. So the wedding gown that she didn't wear because of what happened to her. So what we did, we got a bouquet of flowers, and at the end of the night, she got to throw them back into the crowd. It was so cool. It was just brilliant. And this other photo, that's the photo of the mum with the two teenage daughters. So we allowed teenage daughters to come along too, and there were a handful of those. So that was really beautiful as well. And we set up this photo corner for them to have their little portraits taken. The lady in the black dress here with the purple hair, Ondine, has since come on board with us, and she's been volunteering with us as well, and she's been amazing. She was a power with it, sourcing prizes for the Lucky Door Prize. She found some amazing things, including one from Bonnet Rock, thank you. So where to now? So what we have done since the ball is set up a company called Her Strength, Her Story. We're in the process of trying to obtain not-for-profit status for it, and this will be the umbrella for a number of things, and one of them will be the Butterflies and Boots Ball each year that we will do, as well as things like peer support groups for youth that are growing up in home environments affected by DFV, and peer support groups for women. And they're 2 areas where nobody's feeling like there's nothing happening in that space in Tasmania at all. So this is what we're looking to do all off the side of our desk while we work full time to raise families. And Kira is amazing. She would have been here tonight, but she is living in Black Point. She is only 22 years old. She has custody of the 3 younger brothers, and she is an amazing advocate for victims of DFV. She speaks at the rallies and candlelight vigils. So it's a shame she wasn't here. Anyway, so I just wanted to give you a certificate of thank you, appreciation for helping us make this happen. And I'd like to ask if we can have the Civic Centre again next year. We're going to make it an annual event, so it's going to be the last Saturday of May every year. And we'd love the Brighton Council to come on.
report in regards to that request, and it may just send an email, and we can certainly put it up. And, I won't preempt the answers. But
no, we had a lot of discussion around do we move it around, like different LGAs. After the night was amazing. It blew us away, the response. It really was incredible. And we walked out of there, Kira and I said, and we said to each other, it has to be in Bridgewater every year. If someone else wants to do another one somewhere else, yeah, right, go for it. But it was perfect. It was just perfect.
That's great.
There you go.
Thank you very, very much. Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you.
And I hope it goes from strength to strength.
Yes, we certainly hope so. We were wondering actually if we could come along, whether it's at a meeting like this or something else, and actually do a proper presentation of our plans for moving forward. We're obviously going to start to get into that process of seeking partners and sponsors and things like that.
Yep. That one I can answer, and we'd be love to have you come along and give us that presentation. That one's an easy one. I can make that decision.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for yourself and your volunteers. Look, this is a really good news story. But I'm going to get tears down my eyes, so congratulations on you and your staff. It's absolutely cool. Terrific what you're trying to do for the community and the ladies in general.
If I can just add to that too, and good people, I love what you said, where you just said, no, we just got up and said, well, no, we're just going to do it. And I love that attitude. Like, you know, the way you said that, there was no way it wasn't going to happen. And if good people always got up and said, you know what, we're just going to do it, we'd live in a much better world. So, yeah, well done. It's, yeah, very, very inspiring. Well done.
Our plan had been to spend this year chasing grants for it. And I actually have to give Joe Self a little bit of credit here.
Yeah, yeah.
She was talking to me one day about her youth stuff, and she said she got to the point where she just I won't be sad, I just need to do it. Mm. And so, she did plan that setting online, and we got to the start of this year, and we were going, no.
Well done.
Congratulations.
It was amazing. It was so empowering. It was.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Councillors, moving on to item 8 on our agenda, and that's reports from council. And item 8.1 is the mayor's communications for the month of August and part of July. Is there anything there that anyone wishes to ask any questions about, or?
Did they mention, Mr. Mayor, about Tazwater, about the future price rise?
That was the Tazwater briefing, was certainly all about that.
Yes.
So, 8.8%. I think the interesting thing is, just from what George Theo indicated on the day in the particular briefing, was that the 8.8% isn't going to be hit everyone. There is actually people out there living in residential situations that will have a drop in their prices on water or their water bill in regards to both their sewerage and water services and their usage. So, I mean, that is a change, and it certainly hasn't been promoted very well in the media. I think the underlying point that Tazwater wanted to make was that the assets they were given were substandard in a lot of municipalities. Their attempts over the last probably 10 to 15 to 20 years, has it been that long? 15, I think, to get those up to scratch is ongoing and needs some input of money. So essentially that is the underlying problem, is that Tazwater need money to continue to upgrade substandard assets, particularly some sewerage infrastructure that needs to be upgraded and doesn't make EPA requirements at the moment. So they're working hard to do that. They're obviously working hard in Launceston to fix, at Tea Tree Bend, to fix the infrastructure there and to decommission some other plants in northern Tasmania. I did ask if we could push our Greenpoint plant a little bit further forward to the front of the queue. They just smiled. but there's no harm in asking every time we go and have a meeting with them in regards to that. And obviously the underlying indication too was if to prepare for growth, they need to spend more money on upgrading and increasing capacity in areas that are growing. And that's another reason why they need that 8.8%. But in saying that, the 8.8% price rise needs to go through the independent regulator for approval, so it's a long way off coming to fruition, and they may not get approval for that particular price rise, so time will tell. But they certainly gave a very thorough explanation as to the workings out and the reason why they've asked for that much. If there's anything further?
Just one question. Yeah. How are they going with their investigation into the amount of water that's being lost out of the system and unaccounted for?
It's huge, Councillor Owen, and that is, once again, that's part of the request for further funds to replace ageing infrastructure. And that's part of it. It's the water loss that is, I think it's Callum, you correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's about 25% loss of water. So that is part of the reason why the funding, or they've requested those additional funds to upgrade ageing infrastructure to minimise that water loss. Is 25% about correct?
I think, in my mind, it's about 30. I can't remember if that's present or if that was recent. So that's effectively 30% where they didn't know where it was going and weren't charging anyone for it.
If I was running the bank and 30% of my savings were going out the door unaccounted for, I'd be rather concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, as I said, part of that funding is to replace the ageing infrastructure that they were handed. If they can replace pipes in the ground, and then they're confident that obviously some of those losses can be found, and we won't lose as much in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Owen. If there's nothing further, can someone prepare to move that report we've received? Moved by Councillor McMaster, second by Councillor Irons. And I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 8.2 is reports from council representatives. Is there anything to report? Councillor Gidd.
Yes, Mr Mayor. I'll positively report on the State Fire Commission last month's meeting there. We had talked about amalgamation of two brigades up north. Both brigades was agreement to do it, so there wasn't any for that one. It's the second time in the last 2 months we've had amalgamation, so that was true. We looked at the TAS Fire and Emergency Service financial report for the previous year and the coming year, so it looks very healthy. We're trying to reduce our cash in the bank because of Treasury might want to sort of decide they would like it. It looks a bit too much, and we might have to hand it over. So the other one was the RTO, the Registrar's Training Organisation, did an annual audit, so it came up reasonably well. They also audited any volunteers and career staff that that attended the training organisation. And a couple of things came out of that is some of the information the pamphlets forgot handing out is out of date. And I know that for a fact there's a trainer down there. With things that need to upgrade, but they have been upgrading some of the packages right up to them. It's one package particularly is the mainland's going to grab it, so that's how far it's got ahead now with those. So then that was the Australian Skills Quality Authority did that. So, and the other one was fleet management. We're way behind the eight ball with some of our fleet stuff, especially the urban pumpers. We're way behind with those. We've we've had outsourcing these small light tankers, which they call 5-1s. The actual facts of those get done, but we're doing a whole review. We might have to outsource a lot more, including the whole lot of one particular type of vehicle, because now the police are there and the SES, and they also look after sustainable timber parks and wildlife, so the police cannot handle it also. So that was the State Fire Commission. It's very interesting sometimes there, but other times it's very mundane, so yeah. The other one probably I attended as well on behalf of Callum was the Southern Municipal Coordinators Liaison Group down at Huonville. Down there, first off, we had a nice talk from a lady, Angela. She's been here a long time, so a different Angela. So, and she talked on the Huon Valley Council's liability framework, and they've got a Huon Vision, community centralised partnership, new ways of planning and new ways of working. They set out, the thing I was really interested in is they set out a survey to 1,200 people. I thought that was a fairly sized survey. But what they did with the survey, they didn't send it to the township of Huonville or the major towns. They sent it to the isolated towns to see what was going on there. And one particular thing that I mentioned to Callum about it is the questions they asked on the emergency services aspect of it. You know, for instance, floods, fire, heat waves, the whole and storms and all that. And some of the questions, did you have torches? Do you have TAS Alert? And TAS Alert was 62% of people down that way were on TAS Alert, which I was really, really ultra surprised. But they've had the fire and flood, so maybe we don't have that. So I hate to see a survey. I don't think it would be as good as that. But a lot of the questions there were very, very well set out and well questioned. The questions made sense, so I was really quite impressed with the way they did that. So if it's in the future we do something like that, maybe we'll get in touch with those. But definitely get in touch with them about, I've got one sheet I'll hand on from their Huon Valley Sustainable Framework. The way that it's going, so that was very good. Outside of that, we agreed that the Red Cross Emergency Community Workforce Proposal, they're putting a couple of people on to do some free sessions on different aspects to do with the recovery and all that sort of thing. At no cost to any councils, we just had to agree so they can get the funding application. So that was there as well. And the other one was the TAS emergency framework, and that was mainly to do with, and that was issue two, to do with child shelter and child protection and security around places like that. One was held over, and we discussed it shortly, was fuel security, which is a big problem for councils if we don't get any tankers from the mainland coming across to Tasmania. We've got a very, very extremely limited resources of fuel. And in a major emergency, we've run out quick and smart on that. So the Department of Police and Emergency Service are going to come up with some at the next meeting. And that was really it. So that was well worth attending. So, yeah.
Thanks, Councillor Caird. Councillor, is there anything anyone else wishes to add? If not, can I have someone move that Councillor Geard's report be received? Moved by Councillor Whelan, seconded by Councillor Irons. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Carried. Thank you. Thanks, Councillor Geard. Item 9 is miscellaneous correspondence, and we did receive a letter of appreciation from Herdman's Cove Primary School regarding Council's funding for their fresh fruit program. And that letter was included in our agenda. Item 10 is notification of council workshops. There was one council workshop held on the 5th of August. Attendance and apologies are noted in our agenda. Item 11 is notices on motion. There are no notices on motion. Item 12 is consideration of supplementary items to the agenda. There are no supplementary items. Item 13 is reports from committees. There were no committees meetings in the month of August. Item 14 is Council acting as a planning authority. Just remind everyone that we are working under the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993 in both discussion and decision making of any items following. Item 14.1, and Councillor Geard and Councillor Irons have declared an interest and are leaving the room. Item 14.1 is a combined draft amendment to the Brighton Local Provision Schedule and a planning permit application at 594 and 596 Tea Tree Road, Tea Tree, a section 40K and 42 report. Hand over to Jo.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
This report relates to our response to the public consultation in relation to the combined amendment application for the Tea Tree Hall. Application was initiated by the Planning Authority with a attached subdivision application from PDA in relation to some boundary adjustments that to form part of that. So that the application was initiated at the meeting in June and then was advertised for a 28-day period, which is required under LUPA. That included twice advertising in the Mercury. During the consultation period, we received four submissions. That was from TES Networks, TES Rail, NRE and TES Water. TES Networks, NRE and TES Water provided advice that they didn't have any issues or concerns with the proposal. TES Rail's response was more in relation to the subdivision permit process and asked us to attach the standard notes that they issue generally with most of their responses to referral. We've assessed that and considered that it's quite appropriate to amend the permit that was submitted at the initiation to include advice that any development should be done in accordance with those standard notes. So therefore, under Section 40 and 42K, 40K and Section 40 of the Act, we recommend that the TPC be advised that the four representations were received. No modifications are warranted in relation to the rezoning application, but that the draft permit be modified to include TES Rail standard notes, and that a copy of the report, the representations and the amended draft permit be provided to the Commission as outlined in the six recommendations in the report.
Thanks, Joe. Councillors, any questions of Joe on this particular item?
Happy to move, Mayor.
Thank you.
I'm happy to second.
No worries. Thank you. There's a recommendation on page 10, which is being moved by Councillor Owen and seconded by Councillor Curran. Any discussion or debate? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Against? Carried. Thank you very much. We'll just grab... Thanks, Ella. Moving on our agenda for this evening, item 15 is petitions, and there are no petitions that have been submitted for the month of August. Item 16 is officers' reports, and item 16.1 is the Youth Engagement Officer Progress Report, May to July 2025. I think we'll hand over to Anne.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Flack is an apology this evening. He had some family commitments, so... if anyone has any questions regarding John's report, please feel free to ask. The key things, I guess, most of what John does is very noteworthy, but the key things that he's been doing in recent times, I guess, he has engaged in a couple of homelessness committees and networks, which have been really fruitful for John in terms of understanding what's going on in that space and being able to connect in with people who work in that area. So that's been really, really beneficial, and John will continue to do that on a regular basis. The other thing that has been of real interest in the community has been the intergenerational drumming that John has been doing at Gagebrook Primary School, which has worked incredibly well. I attended one of the sessions to write the article for the Brighton Community News, and it was towards the end, just before they did a concert in the school assembly, and the kids were incredibly engaged. These are kids that are often sent along to the drumming because they're not that engaged in their classroom activities, and you could see that this was a really special time for them, and John is going to continue doing that with the School for Seniors ladies who have purchased their own drums to continue to do that as well. So that's been a really successful program, and hopefully will extend out beyond just Gagebrook Primary as some level, and others can learn to drum and do something similar in the other schools as well. And then the big one for us, for John and for our team, has been what we call the Night Cafe down at the Civic Centre, using the Communities for Children van. That is an initiative of one of our BYAG members, Anne, and we go along to support her with that, and it's growing the word of mouth. The young people that are coming through, they look forward to it every week. And the surprising thing, as John's noted in his report, is how young some of the kids are that are coming along on their own. So we've kind of had to shift what our expectation was of that. But we still have an older cohort that comes as well, and they almost act as mentors for the younger kids too. So it's a really important time for those kids. They look forward to it every week. So we definitely want to keep that going. And there is a pitch that Anne has put in to the Youth Justice Reform Task Force funding that we've been working on. So hopefully we'll get some funding through that for that to continue. But they were really the key things I wanted to note there. But anyone had any other questions?
I feel guilty for not knowing. But can you tell us a little bit more about the Night Cafe?
Yes, so it was an idea of our Brighton Youth Action Group member, Anne, who she herself grew up out here. I don't think she'll mind me telling the story because she told it in the Brighton Community News. Understood that there are kids living in our area who perhaps don't always want to go home at night, and not necessarily getting anyone to connect with at home or talk to at home. And so she wanted to start the cafe as a place where kids could come have a Milo. She does ham and cheese toasties. We do some cover soups and stuff like that. And just play with each other. We have the VR headsets in the van. And generally just slowly connect with us and their peers, and just feel like it's a safe place to come and have a bit of fun for a couple of hours once a week. Mm. Yeah.
Right. Are they all local or some from other suburbs as well?
They are predominantly local. Yeah. That's in all of that. Like, they come from our suburbs, not just Bridgewater.
Like Glenorchy and all as well. Do you get
others
coming in?
No.
Right.
They're very local, yeah.
I think, if I may, one of the nice stories that I heard about it, because it's weekly, is the first few weeks there'd be people who would kind of scope it out but not actually go to it, and then they'd get a bit closer the week after, and now they're there every week. So,
yeah.
You know, just that consistency and knowing that it's there, and just being able to get a toasty and a Milo for free.
When did you say what?
Hang out Friday.
It's a Wednesday. Yeah, and so it's what you would call soft engagement. So we don't advertise it. It's like James said, it's just that showing up consistently every week, and the kids get to know that they can trust to come and have a chat. And
word of mouth.
Yeah, that's right. So it's just a simple way of being a reliable and safe place.
So do they have a certain close-down time on a Wednesday?
Yeah, so at the moment it runs from 4 till 6. Yeah. It's pretty cold.
And to us as well, in terms of numbers for BYAG, like the group is obviously pretty small and pretty tight. Like, are the numbers sort of staying the same or going up or going down? Or?
So they've gone up, definitely gone up. But every week we're getting between 12 to 15 kids coming and going.
That's more than when I last interacted with them.
Yeah.
Have noise complaints gone up in Brighton since we employed Gerald? It is an amazing way to connect, though. There's a few groups here outside of that with the drums, and I mean, who doesn't want to hit things as hard as
you?
Fantastic. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
You know, it's good to hear that BYAG group's going, but I think for me, hearing that it's one of the members that drive this. I think that's fantastic because they're our future,
yeah.
future leaders, aren't they? That's really
yeah.
good. Yeah.
And you might have before, but maybe just a really short summary of that pitch process and the funding that's coming to this municipality and what the funding is specifically for, I guess, from the state government?
Yeah, so essentially the Youth Justice Reform Task Force came to a Brighton Alive meeting. They needed to think about how they were going to do some fairly quick wins in terms of place-based work. And originally it was $100,000. And the idea is that they would look at building with our Brighton Alive group ideas around how we do early intervention with young people. So it's very, very early intervention, like our night cafe, that sort of thing. And so over the course of a couple of months, we workshopped ideas with our community. So it was anyone was invited to come along. It wasn't just services. It was individuals. And that's Anne went and built on her idea around the night cafe as part of that as well. And so got down to, I think there was probably about a dozen pitches originally of ideas that got voted on by community members. DCIP, like it is now DCIP rather than DPAC, department also looked at those, but ultimately the community has decided what they think will work best out here with our young people. And then it came right down, to, narrowed right down. There was a final voting process from the community. And then there is a panel. James is on the panel. So we chose a panel of community members, a young community member, a community member, a representative from council who hadn't had anything to do with the process, so independent in that sense, and a DCIP member. I think that was it, wasn't it, James?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that panel then had the final say based on looking at the votes and discussing the different pitches that came in. But in amongst all of that process, because it had been working so well, DCIP said, well, we've actually now got 300,000, not just 100,000. So there will be another round of ideas. We can't talk about which ideas have got through yet because that still hasn't been announced. But we'll do another round of pitches and council is holding that money, that grant money, so they needed to get it out into our area because of the end of financial year and stuff. But we will hold that and then we've put in place some governance around that as well. But it's quite interesting and different and really, I think, going to be quite a fruitful way of government working with local government, working with community and that whole place-based approach to doing stuff. So I think I mentioned we've actually put in to do a paper at the Queensland conference about how this has worked so well because it's not common that state government can work right down at that community level like they have. So we're presenting that at the Queensland Community Development Conference in October.
Councillors, any further questions? If not, just a recommendation to receive the notes and the information in the Youth Engagement Officer's Progress Report. Thank you. Moved by Councillor McMaster.
Can we possibly add to that a thank you to John for his work?
You certainly may. John, are you happy to add a thank you on as the mover?
Yep. And do you think you can spend the days with the cafe?
So that will depend on the funding and what we get in the future, but that's the intention.
That'd be good.
Long term, yeah.
That'd be a good program.
It's the people resources at the moment.
So the new motion is just, or the new motion is up on the board with just to extend our thanks to John And it's moved by Councillor McMaster. A seconder, please.
Councillor Murtagh.
Councillor Murtagh, thank you. Any discussion or debate? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 16.2 is a new policy. It's in our volunteer policy. James or Ange?
Definitely Ange.
Ange, volunteer policy. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, thank you. Probably long overdue that we had a volunteer policy. So the policy has been, I guess it's the next step after we did the volunteer strategy last year, in August 2024. The policy has been developed by looking at, as we would normally do, lots of other policies in local government and taking the best of those and current best practice that's been through our risk officers have looked at this, HR's looked at it. We've also taken it to the Child and Youth Safety Working Group here in Council to review, so it has had good consultation along the way, and I think is probably fairly standard. I guess the key thing that, and Councillor Owen asked these questions earlier around, first of all, we are saying that all volunteers, no matter what they're doing with us, will have a working with vulnerable people check, because it just makes sense that that will be standard because of our child and safety framework. It's just safer that way that we do that. And the other thing is the age limit on volunteers at the 75 break there. So that's really an insurance policy thing, but as noted, I think, somewhere in the document here, you can still volunteer 75 and over, but you're not covered by our insurance, so it would be at your own risk.
Thank you. Councillors, any questions on the policy as it's been presented, together with obviously the registration forms and the questionnaire that obviously each individual has to complete?
Happy to move.
Thank you. The recommendation is council adopt the volunteer policy 7.13, and that's been moved by Councillor Owen, seconded by Councillor Curran. Any discussion or debate? If not, I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 16.3 is a policy review in regards to our public question time and deputations. Hand over to Janine.
Thank you, Mayor. This policy, 16.3 and 16.4, is just minor tweaking and changes to the regulations changing from 2015 to 2025, and for the next item, we have a committee meeting scheduled for the second Tuesday of the month, as we know, and now the first Tuesday of the month. So they're just some minor changes for both of these policies. Don't change the intent of the policies, just a few wording which you would have in your attachments.
Councillors, any questions on 16.3, public question time and deputations policy?
No, I'm happy to move it.
Thank you. If there's no questions, it's been moved by Councillor Geard, seconded by Councillor McMaster. Any discussion or debate? I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 16.4 is a policy review in regards to council meetings. Meeting cycle and commencement time. Janine has indicated that there's been a small change in regards to our committee meeting schedules, and the policy is as presented in our agenda. Are there any questions of Janine? If not, someone prepared to move. Moved by Councillor Iron, seconded by Councillor Whelan. Discussion or debate? I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. item 16.5 is a $42 court in Brighton. Gillian or Megan?
I think I've spoken with councillors about this one previously. So Brighton Play Centre and Playgroup, they've been operating out of councillors' building at $42 court for over 20 years, probably a lot longer than that. During that time, there's been a multitude of children that have accessed the services provided. Currently, the building is used for 2 half-days each week. Playgroup operates out of there on a Monday, which has an attendance of like 10 to 15 children, and Brighton Play Centre on a Tuesday morning, which has 5 children. So currently enrolled, so 3 of whom will go to kindergarten next year. Recently, the Department of Education conducted an audit of the centre and identified the exterior paint on the building had weathered and was flaking and starting to peel. This is a concern as the paint could potentially be lead-based, which is dangerous if swallowed or inhaled. However, the paint needs to be tested to actually confirm that. A recent meeting was held by the CEO and the Executive Officer Risk and Property with the educators of the centre, and officers were just wanting to understand where the educators see the future of the centre. So the educators did advise council staff of their impending retirements. I think one's this year, one's next year. Due to the low numbers of children that are utilising the centre, council needs to consider the future of the centre and if this is in the best interest of the whole community. The council currently pays approximately $4,000 in expenses each year for service costs, of which the play centre pay $1,200 towards these expenses. Council also has provided a community grant to pay for the insurance each year, which is another $4,000. Whilst the play centre is providing a useful service to the community, albeit small numbers of children, there are future development applications in the area for childcare options that could be utilised by the existing users. It's recommended that council investigate exploring future options for this site, which would include building improvements, support a closure of services from the site, and also future development and ownership with a view to report back to council for a decision.
Gillian, I just note that obviously we have consulted with the current people that are running this, the play centre and the play group, and understand their future plans are for them to retire.
Yeah.
So obviously will not continue in its current form anyway.
I was away. I was sick last week when
I can probably answer that.
Thank you.
So one is retiring at the end of this year. The other one had talked about potentially retiring in the next year or so. They should be noted they have recently advertised to see if there's anyone out there that wants to work there and take over. So after discussions, they're sort of holding that a little bit. But they did say they sort of put that out there to see if there is someone. I think it'd be fair to say that everyone in the meeting was like, it's been a bit of an institution for a long time, but I think it was a very open and honest conversation. I think there's a recognition that, maybe things don't last forever, but we've communicated that, there's not a determined end, but we need to have a look at it and look at it in consultation with them, and there is genuine concern that the building, even aside from the lead paint issue, it's a pretty tired building, and I think you'd want to think very carefully about spending any serious money on it. And they talked as well about, the model has changed over the years as well. There's a lot more happening in schools now with the Launch Into Learning program. So, just a number of things to consider, but really seeking council's endorsement to explore further and really just bring council up to speed that those conversations have already commenced.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit of an institution. I know 3 great Grey family children of mine have been through that particular facility. So, it was certainly did its job in that regard. But I suppose this motion really is, or the recommendation, is just to explore what uses and what we need to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank Councillors, questions?
May I make a comment? I'm happy to move this, but may I make the comment that I totally agree with you. I think the building is past its use-by date. It has filled a very vital part for the children in this community over a number of years. and it would be really sad to see it go. I mean, I ran that playgroup for 9 years. My children didn't go there, but my children did. But I've spoken to some of the parents who go there, and they see that the end is nigh, and especially if Jennifer is going to retire, and I don't think Marie would mind if she retired as well. So maybe if we could just keep it till the end of the year. And then see what happens. Or the end of the school year, I mean.
The building office, the building, have a look at those. Yeah, it's very extreme. You know, you would, to be honest, if you was going to do anything, you'd knock it down and do a new one. But it's just run its course. I think the whole lot's probably run its course. Things have changed, especially with the federal government putting money into childcare and all the other aspects of education. And that's things have changed from when we had children going there and that to what the time is today. So it's probably an appropriate time to have a look at the whole lot. Maybe, you know, people, maybe it is, but we could come up with, put a new building in and virtually do the same thing, but at least have more people than what's using at the moment. That's, you know, very low, extremely low numbers, actually. It's just a shame. But, I think it's a good idea to view all options and put them on the table and go from there.
Councillors, I'm happy just for some discussion. If there's some other comments that want to be made prior to, I'll obviously note that Councillor Curran is prepared to move the recommendation. Councillor Irons?
My only question is just as part of the process, because obviously, I mean, I don't know a lot about it directly. Obviously, I have a little one as well at this point that is looking at these sorts of things. So I just wondered, as part of the process, like, so obviously there's the building, what those guys do, and safety and all that stuff, and other opportunities for the building. But as part of the process, also analysing how big a hole it does sort of fill or potentially fill. Like, is that sort of part of the process to go, well, there's other
options? Yeah, absolutely. And that was part of the conversation as well about, you know, what would it mean if it closed tomorrow? What would the impact be?
And then vice versa, if it, you know, was refurbished and off, what would that look like?
And there's also sort of two streams. So there's the more childcare side of it, and then there's playgroup, which from what I understand, some I can't remember the correct term, but you know, the home childcare thing. So there's at least one
family daycare.
That there's at least one person that does that and will bring their little crew along to the centre as well. There's also quite different building requirements for those two things. Like, for proper certified childcare, it's pretty hardcore now, like everything, windows, certain heights and thickness and so on, playgroup, not so much. So one of the things we'd explore, and we could talk about that a little bit, is, you know, is there an alternative venue, particularly for the playgroup element of it? So, we'll basically throw everything in the mix and try and come back with a fuller picture.
It's part of that thought being that part of the process, if you have got someone with that experience who's retiring within a year, could they be part of that transition to another area or helping transition the kids over so they're actually, you know, that's part of the a retirement process or something like that?
The issue is finding another facility that could be used for the playground.
We've also got one approved childcare centre on a building we used to own. We have another active DA, and we have another pre-DA inquiry. So there was a lot of interest in the federal election on childcare, like particularly on Brighton. There's clearly an understanding in the public and private sector that there is an unmet demand here and an opportunity to much better serve that. But as with these things always, it's difficult to know the exact timing of those things.
Yep.
Thank you.
Goodbye. If I may, playgroup's completely different from childcare.
Yeah.
Playgroup, you go with your child, whereas daycare, you leave your child. Yeah. Play centre, you leave the child.
Yeah.
It's only usually about 3 hours. But playgroup is normally the parent and the children or the child.
Which is all.
Yeah, which is really good. So if we could find another venue for playgroup, that would be really good.
And the thing, through you, Mr. Mayor, is also the regulations are going to change for all the problems that have been going on when they leave their children there. It's going to be that much red tape now compared to what we've got, so that's going to be a financial burden on either the people there that's running at the moment or on council. So.
And can I just say, like in the report, it did come up that one of their insurance doesn't cover what's come out in that the recommendations of the child safety, safety thing as well. So their insurance, like, isn't covering what it should either, and we didn't approve it for this year's community grant, so they're going to have to find that insurance premium to pay as well. So.
Change of use back to a house, we'd have to invoke a development application, and then the existing building regs, wouldn't it? So.
Through you, Mayor, yes, so part of it, so from a planning perspective, would require, if we were going to change it, depending on what it is, to a change of use. We would then need to look at the building category, and then that may require certain adjustments to it.
Like insulation and whatever else, we'd probably end up with a soccer, end up with one of the soccer club rooms sort of thing, where the building's not worth anything.
To be honest, the building isn't worth It isn't worth repairing. I mean, it was deemed unsuitable to be inhabited by, for residential purposes, way back in 1990-something.
So part of our strategic plan, and it's in our annual plan as well, is us to be constantly trying to optimise the value to the whole community of our built assets. So that'll form part of this analysis as well of, you know, what is the best return or use of that, not just the building, but the site that it's on for the community. And that will explore everything. Like, it could be a good site for residential development or NDIS housing. It's a good flat area with a park on each side. So we'll throw all that into the analysis as well.
First, Councillor Owen, I'd just like to thank councillors and staff for allowing me the indulgence of letting everyone have their say. I think it's important that everyone has an opportunity to voice their opinion. They're not particularly questions, as they're supposed to be, but I think we can always break the rules just a little bit on occasions. Councillor Owen.
Yeah, mine's more of a question. I guess says the exploration, is that going to be an internal or an external?
The what, sorry?
An internal exploration or
of options.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll prepare a report for council to consider. We'll do it internally. There might be a need if we go further with assessment of the building, we might need to external. But in terms of talking to the current operators and exploring demand and other options in the area and site options, that'll all be internal.
Absorbed into the current budget.
Absolutely, yeah. It's our bread and butter.
Thank you.
If none further, I'm happy to second it anyway.
Thank you. We have a recommendation on page 20, which has been moved by Councillor Curran and seconded by Councillor Geard. Is there any further discussion or debate? If not, I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Carried. Thank you. Item 16.6, Councillor Curran has declared an interest. So she'll go and eat all the chips in the tea room.
Long she leaves the red.
Item 16.6 is a request to surrender Council Road Verge at 168 Brighton Road. Gillian?
Yeah. So council has been approached by the owner of 168 Brighton Road to purchase a portion of the road verge outside the existing existing dwelling for the future development of the parcel of land for a pharmacy and consulting room. So a bit of history about the site. So back before the Brighton bypass was constructed, the land was held by the Crown for future road widening of the Midland Highway. When the bypass was built, this strip of land was offered for sale to all the adjoining landholders. And so for whatever reason at the time, this was not taken up by the owner and was transferred to council. When approached by the new owner of 168 Brighton Road, it was found that this piece of land has a revisionary clause on it. So the revisionary clause is found on some pieces of land in our municipality that have been transferred by the Crown to the council, and if at any time council wishes to dispose of the said land, market value is required to be paid to the Crown in order for the land to be owned freehold. The councils will recall these revisionary clauses have been taken up by council for our purchase of 87 Gunn Street and also 209 Brighton Road. So the land in question currently has a footpath located on it, however there is an excess of land that was transferred by the Crown that is surplus to council needs. If council agrees to dispose of this excess land, it is recommended that the land in question is surrendered to the Crown and the owner applies to purchase the land directly from the Crown, with council retaining the strip of land that has a footpath in garden bed. So the land would need to follow the process for disposal of land under Section 178 of the Local Government Act, and the owner of 168 Brighton Road would be responsible for any out-of-pocket expenses that council incurs during this process, such as legal fees or advertising. By relinquishing the excess land will mean that the Brighton community will have access to a larger pharmacy than is currently there to service their needs, pending DA approval and stuff like that down the track. It's recommended to surrender the part of land which has restrictions under the Crown Land Act to enable the property owner to apply to purchase it directly from the Crown and to pay for all costs for this transaction, with council retaining ownership of the garden bed and footpath as per the attached map on the agenda item.
Sorry, I've just put two. I didn't recognise the name at first, so I probably should declare an interest here. It's a very loose one, but before it gets to voting, I should probably depart.
Thank you, Councillor Irons. Just note that Councillor Irons has declared an interest in this particular item and left the room. Have we got a quorum? Four? Yes. Sorry?
Four.
Oh, good.
We need five.
For this one,
but we've got five.
Okay. Yeah. Councillors, any questions of Gillian?
No. I'm happy to move. Makes sense.
Second.
Thank you. Recommendation is on page 22. It's been moved by Councillor Geard and seconded by Councillor Murtagh. Is there any discussion or debate? If not, I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Next item on our agenda is item 16.7, which is the Lennox Park Master Plan, the first consultation results, and draft plans for the second consultation. Alex.
Thank you, Mayor. So, Council had commenced work on the Lennox Park Master Plan, which includes the Cloak Oval area as well. Part of this process, we engaged Play Street, the consultants to lead the consultation and design. The first stage was the initial community consultation. So as part of that process, we, us along with Play Street, attended a co-design session on the 17th of May. And we also opened up an online engagement platform through the new social pinpoint page, which allowed people to drop and make comments and the like. We had some really good engagement through that process, so 75 online participants, and we had 37 people attend on the day, which was a, whilst it was a chilly day, it was a good turnout and we received some good information. Part of the feedback that we received so far was looking at improved facilities and amenities around the area, improved recreation and play spaces, So people talking about the different ages and where the location of the play equipment is, enhanced environment, and alike. So essentially now, as part of that feedback, the consultants have now developed a plan. They've broken that up into stage one and stage two. So stage one representing the immediate short term, so completed as soon as possible subject to funding and alike. Then stage two representing works to be completed in the longer term, so greater than 10 years. This might be even, you know, further, but it is a long-term vision for the site. So the recommendation for today is to endorse those concept designs to go out for a second stage consultation, which will be online surveys and seeking that feedback through the social pinpoint page, which people have used previously.
Thanks, Alex. Councillors, any questions of Alex on this particular item?
Just a statement. The first time I was looking at it, I thought, oh, I've all been photos sponsored by Arnott's, but there's a packet of biscuits there. And I thought, gee, that's very strange. But only the question is, like, on number seven I looked at there was about Cloak Oval. I thought the question was a bit ambiguous. It sort of could have been one way. Asking that question, if I was a cricket, you know, anything to do with cricket, I would have said, no, leave where it is. But if I'd have known, if you know that councils would look at moving the oval to a better place, then my answer would be totally different. So I thought the question didn't have sufficient information on it. But otherwise, the rest of it, the whole lot, actually easy reading, very well done, and pass my remarks on to him. It's very more than professional. He's gone above beyond what he should need to do. I found it quite easy to look at and everything else. So it made a lot of sense to me.
Thanks, Councillor Geard. Councillors?
If there's nothing further, there is a recommendation on page 27 that Council notes the first consultation outcomes and secondly endorses the draft master plans and reports for the purpose of the second round consultation for the Lennox Park Master Plan. Is someone prepared to move? Moved by Councillor Owen, seconded by Councillor McMaster. Is there any discussion or debate?
No, again, very well done, and let's wait for the next round of consultation. Good.
Yeah. Thanks, Councillor Owen. Is there anything further? I'll put the motion then. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 16.8 is the Brighton Active Transport Strategy Community Engagement. Obviously, we heard from Brian a little while ago. Over to you, Alex.
Thank you, Mayor. So, as we discussed, that Council was presented in the workshop, an overview of the strategy. So, what we've done here is work through, I guess it's a future plan in regards to active transport throughout our municipality. We understand that the needs of our demographics and our people within our community. We've got challenges with public transport and alike. Also our demographics and cost, you know, effective transport modes. So the strategy looks at developing a 10-year infrastructure plan with 26 priorities, including shared paths and footpaths and the like. Also talks about the cycling network, which breaks down the categories of the network itself, and our objectives and overall actions around safety and participation and supporting infrastructure, looking at where our growth areas are and how we connect those up. And we've done quite a good job, and these two highways are probably the most recent one and looking at the connections with the bridge as well. So the strategy, which, you know, a shout out to staff, was developed in-house by our strategic planner and also our senior engineer. So they've got a good knowledge of our area, and they've done a really good job with some input from state growth. So the recommendation for this is to be released for a four-week consultation period, and again using our social pinpoint page to get the feedback from the community to see whether we've hit the mark or there's any items or areas that they would like to see addressed.
Thanks, Alex. Councillors, any questions of Alex? Councillor Whelan.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Alex, the implementation plan on page 35, when we look at Boyer Road, and I'd sort of note that that area and development in that area is sort of snowballing, I suppose. It's coming forward fairly quickly.
Yep.
We talk about a long-term priority for there at high cost, and I'm wondering whether that should be a shorter, maybe a medium term, just so that we can look at sort of some sort of grant funding or whatever to sort of coincide with the development that's sort of occurring at the same time.
Sure. Through you, Mayor, good question and good point. I think that certainly we've seen a lot of traction for the Boyer Road. The it's currently before the Commission. Also, too, we currently have a grant application in with the Urban Precincts and Partnership Program. So a big part of that is that we've actually applied to master plan this out and potentially find a source of grant funding to enable some of this infrastructure as well. So we could certainly adjust that priority and reduce the term and look at applying for grant funds with that. Also, too, if there was some movement in that space as part of the subdivisions that would occur and the actual development, it would be projects that we would bring online and look at through the assessment process.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillors, any further questions? We obviously covered this off in our workshop anyway, but there is a recommendation on page 31 that Council endorse the Draft Brighton Act to Transport Strategy 25 to 35 for public engagement, and note that the feedback will be synthesised and used to refine the strategy prior to its final adoption at a future Council meeting. Someone prepared to move that recommendation? Moved second. By Councillor Whelan, seconded by Councillor Geard. Is there any discussion or debate? I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 16.9 is a new policy, assessment of council-related planning applications policy. And once again, we looked at this at our meeting on or our workshop on the 5th of August. But I'll hand over to Alex to explain again.
Thank you, Mayor. Pretty short and sweet with this one. Essentially, there's been a couple of recent Board of Inquiries into councils in Tasmania, and it's been picked up a few times where one of the inquiries, the recommendation was to develop a policy into when council acts as the applicant for a development application, but is also the assessor as well. So there is an inherent conflict there. And particularly with staff and how that works. So the purpose of this policy is really to look at how we manage those potential conflicts and promote the transparency through the development process. There is some work that's happened at state around the DAPs that would look at this, but that's not there yet. I think as part of the broader local government review, this issue had popped up several times as well. But the policy is based off policies that were done in New South Wales where there was specific legislation to address this. And so they used a template and we've more or less adopted that and made some adjustments to make sure it suits and it reflects best practice.
Thanks, Alex. Councillors, any questions of Alex on this particular policy?
No questions.
Councillor Whelan?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Two things. With determination of major planning applications, the determination by the planning authority could subsequently then be delegated back to staff. And I think at that level, is it appropriate that all major developments be heard by the planning authority?
Sure. Through you, Mayor. Yes, the policy didn't necessarily touch on that, but we could adjust the planning delegation requirements so that if it was a council application, that does actually come to the planning authority. So that can be an easy adjustment to the delegations to address that.
Certainly. Happy if that's the majority of the feeling of councillors.
Mm-hmm. I'd support that.
The other thing is, if someone, and I'm not sure whether this falls part of the policy or not, if someone makes a complaint against one of council's developments, can that be done in confidence? Like, what is the process internally that that complaint would be heard by you and probably no one else that isn't related to the hearing of that issue? Sort of.
Sure. So, through you, Mayor, so there's probably a couple of points. We've got the... essentially, there's a setup with our current system that when the requests for planning, and this is a recent adjustment, when the requests for planning that have come in, it is assigned through a... I'm not trying to think of the word. It's assigned through a system or an application portal that is within our system that can only be seen by those that are authorised to do so, and at the moment that is just myself and the enforcement officer and the like. So there is a level of privacy and a like associated with that.
Yep. Satisfied with that, yeah.
Yep.
Thank you. But certainly if that other alteration, if we need an amendment to the recommendation or not?
I think that should probably form part of the motion. I think I saw some nodding from around the table. So the recommendation is that Council adopt Policy 6.4, Assessment of Council Relating Planning Applications Policy. And we probably need to just add something like, and the delegation of development staff in regards to...
This is the previous point, in regards to...
So we could say...
The planning authority.
And adjust the delegations register to ensure that council applications are decided by council's planning authority.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Does that meet your... Thank you. That. Sorry, Councillor Wheeler. The new... or the recommendation has been amended to show as per on the screen. Councillor Wynne, you happy to move that motion?
Yes, yeah, certainly.
Thank you. Moved by Councillor Wynne, seconded by Councillor Owen. Any discussion or debate? Not, I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 17 is Councillor's question time. Item 17.1 is questions on notice, and there was a question on notice submitted by Councillor Owen, and the response is noted in our agenda from the Director of Asset Services. So thank you for that. Item 17.2 is questions without notice. There is an answer and a response from the Director of Asset Services to a question from Councillor Owen, which stem from a meeting on the 15th of July, and that's noted in our agenda also. And with that in mind, are there any other questions without notice? Councillor Owen?
It's just more of an inquiry, and or I can put it, frame it as a question. Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025 in relation to Section 14 for abandoned meetings. I've had two answers, but I'm still keeping me awake at night, and I would like to know whether or not there should be some record or acknowledgement that there was actually a planning authority meeting called, and it wasn't called off until the time of the meeting. And that it should be recorded, those that attended. And I, as I say, Section 14 of that regulation, I think applies and really should be, there should be some record that it happened.
Yep.
And somebody turned up.
I'll answer that, if I may. We obviously made a decision on that particular evening not to hold the meeting because we would not have a quorum. And obviously that decision was made and the meeting didn't go ahead. In retrospect, we have noted on page 7 of our agenda this evening that obviously that was the case in regards to the Planning Authority. It was meeting initially set for 5th of August as two councillors declared an interest in this item. Prior to the start of the meeting and a quorum would not be present, the meeting was not held. Councillor Owen, I believe I made a mistake.
I wasn't trying to apportion blame.
No, but that's fine. If you can't admit when you make a mistake, there's something wrong.
Good on you.
So I believe we probably should have opened that meeting, had the interest declared, indicated that there was no quorum, and then closed the meeting. So, I mean, that's I no, believe
as
that
I say, that... I didn't even look at it that way.
Yeah, and that's on me. So I think that was probably the process that I should have followed.
Well, in also probably us other councillors, including myself, had an issue. I should have picked that up as well. So we know it's just as much about meeting procedures as you do up there. So I'm just as guilty as what you are. So
through you, Mayor, it is quite ambiguous. So our reading of it was that we didn't have to, but we wanted to, as Councillor Owen said, to make sure that it was transparent what had occurred, hence the note in there. But we can, before next month, we can seek clarification from the director about how they interpret it, and we'll follow that in future.
I think through you, Mr. Mayor, also if we do it, that applicant there would know why it was postponed for that period of time. So if we do open the meeting and show, and that's the reason there is not a quorum at the moment, they can say, well, look, he didn't want to handle it, so I know he wouldn't go that way, but they could sort of throw that at you. So
yeah, look, we've obviously communicated the reasons to the applicant morning as well. We were briefly worried the same would happen tonight, actually, when Councillor Della Torre was sick, but So no, that's fine. We can seek the director's view on that.
Thank you. And if there's no further questions, I declare the meeting closed for the month of August. Thank you very much for your attendance.